Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Prove Me Wrong podcast. As always, I'm your host, Pete Lieb. It's great to have you back with me again tonight. The history of human habitation on Earth is long and complicated. How long we've been here? When did we reach, finger quotes, consciousness? When do we begin to form civilization and groups? How do we get to the point where we are now? We like to think that we have figured this out in a very organized, linear way, because I think order makes us all feel better. But there are real examples across the globe of structures and civilizations that defy our current understanding of human capabilities, and they call the timeline of human history into question. We don't know how they built their statues, their buildings, their monuments. It's all a mystery. To question these anomalies, though, is almost a conspiracy theory, quote-unquote, and it gets tucked away into that little box and discarded. Or the solutions that have been posed by modern archaeologists as to how these structures were built, they're usually impossible in terms of the timeline or insufficient technologies of the people that are building them. I posed the idea multiple times previously that just possibly there were another era in human existence where we were just as technologically advanced as what we are right now, and that we're all just one Volkswagen-sized meteor away from the next Stone Age. What proof would there be of our incredible civilization in 1,000 years if that happened today? Probably nothing. Maybe Mount Rushmore, but then the people at that time would assume that those are the faces of ancient alien gods because there would be no proof of the technology that we use to create it. To discuss the topic with me tonight is author and researcher Jim Willis. Jim is the author of Lost Civilizations, The Secret Histories and Suppressed Technologies of the Ancients, and Hidden History, Ancient Aliens and the Suppressed Origins of Civilization, which we'll talk about tonight. Jim has a master's degree in religion and was involved in the Protestant ministry for 40 years. He is the author of 12 books on religion and spirituality. He served as an adjunct college professor in the fields of world religion and instrumental music, and also served as a guest lecturer speaking about topics ranging from historical studies to contemporary spirituality. His recent books include The Quantum Akashic Field, Supernatural Gods, and Ancient Gods. You can find more about Jim on his website, jimwillis.net, and you can find his books also on amazon.com. So without any further ado, I will say welcome, Jim, to the Prove Me Wrong podcast.
Great. Good to be with you. Thank you very much.
So give us a bit more, if you don't mind, about your background and what got you involved in the study of lost civilizations and hidden history.
Sure. I had a good friend whose father passed away 2 months before he was born. And growing up without a father, he decided that he was going to make this image in his mind of who his father was.
Yeah.
And so he would get little snippets of information from his mother, from his older sister. He would get information from friends and everything else. And over the years, he built up this picture in his mind of who his father was. Then later in life, not too many years ago, his mother was about to move out of the house that she had lived in those hyphen. He needed to help her. So he went up in the attic to help organize up there. And he discovered a bunch of journals that his father had written. And as he read these journals, he had never seen them before. As he read these journals, he began to show in his mind, form in his mind, a totally different picture of who his father was. And for the first time, he was beginning to understand the real man. I thought of this friend when I began to start studying ancient history. It's because I had been a college professor myself, and I taught by the book, like most of us did. And it was as if we had forgotten who our father was. It was as if we had forgotten who these people were. They were not what is normally given to us. My wife and I the other night were watching a television documentary about the Mesolithic people in Europe and what is now the United Kingdom. And the pictures that came to us without any commentary at all. The pictures came to us, pictured these big old hairy brutes living in caves, and right. The idea was, this is what a Stone Age culture, hunter-gatherer culture looks like. And we just had accepted it, except that is a totally false picture. And just to give you a kind of an example, in the American West, there was a plains culture out there, the Sioux, the Cheyenne, the Arapaho, the Apache and others, Navajo. And these people were basically hunter-gatherers, Stone Age hunter-gatherers, and yet they had a rich culture filled with a deep mythology that we can still learn from. And I became more and more convinced that this idea that we have been force-fed of what our ancestors were like was just simply not the truth. And the more I began to look into it, the more I began to go to these ancient megaliths, the more I began to study what it was like for those people to do those phenomenal building mm-hmm. projects that, frankly, we couldn't do today.
Right.
The more I began to understand that this was not this primitive, brutish, culture that was just about ready to die any minute. You know, they were always on the verge of starvation. Matter of fact, I even found lessons in history where cultures took on agriculture, tried it for 100 years, didn't like it, and left because it didn't work for them. So it was a totally different way of looking at it. And that's what kind of got me going. That's what got me started. And when I retired from my full-time ministry and playing as a full-time musician mm-hmm. and teaching school and all that kind of stuff, I wanted to come out here and just plain study and learn. And as it turned out, totally by accident, we built a place out in the woods of South Carolina that happens to be right on an ancient archaeological site where tribes of people used to come and gather the blanks they needed for their stone tools and things for the year. And so as we began to work around our property, we find all kinds of stone artifacts and wow. arrowheads and hoes and everything else. It was just a wonderful place to absorb the spirit and really get what it was like back in those days.
Well, this is an enormous topic, Jim, and we mentioned that just slightly before we started, and I could discuss it for hours. But for those who may be new, if you don't mind setting the stage for me briefly, is there a consensus right now, or what is the consensus right now in the scientific community about how life began and how and when our civilizations began?
That is an excellent question, because I assumed that there was a consensus. And I suppose there is, in the sense that there are certain textbooks and certain teachers and everything else that have
right.
gone along with the status quo. But the more I got into it, and as I began to read hidden histories, the more I began to understand that this so-called consensus is really up for grabs. And there is what I like to call a conspiracy of silence going on. I can understand it. I was a college teacher, and I would stand in front of classrooms, and I would teach my particular field, especially was ancient religions and worldwide religions. And I would study, talk a little about the history of how these religions began and what they were and how they got set up and everything else. And I taught for years, and I had to test my students. They had to learn what I was doing because the school insisted that I grade them. So I had to give them tests, and they would parrot back to me the information that I gave to them.
Right.
And the ones that gave the right answers, they were the smart ones, and the other ones, they were having troubles and everything else. Now, all of a sudden, so much of what I taught, I stopped teaching 11 years ago, but so much what I taught is now gone. 11 years ago, we didn't know anything about Denisovans. We hardly understood Neanderthals. We didn't know about the so-called hobbit, the new species that was developed. It was the out of Africa theory, and we all taught that.
Right.
And now all of a sudden, I have to go back to my students and say, all that stuff I taught you and I tested you on, and I built you up by giving you good marks, or I cut you down by not giving good marks. Sorry, I was wrong. That's hard to do. And so a lot of professors simply refused. Classic example here in this country for 100 years. We've been teaching in America that the Clovis civilization was the first American civilization. They came over the Siberian land bridge over Beringia 12 to 16,000 years ago. They invented the Clovis point. And it was such a powerful invention that they were able to basically wipe out all the mega species, the mammoths and the wow. giant sloths and the horses and all the rest of the stuff. And then they gradually spread to cover all of the Americas, and that's it. American history is about 16, maybe 20,000, in some cases, maybe 30,000 years old, and that's it. And that was taught. And if you didn't teach that, you didn't have a job. You couldn't get tenure. You couldn't get an appointment to a college. You couldn't get money for archaeological digs. So you had to stick to the Clovis first denomination, I like to call it. But now, of course, in the last 15 years, that's just gone completely. Clovis has just been torn to shreds. Right down the river from me at the Savannah River, there's a place called the Topper Site where they have found unequivocal human occupation signs going back as many as 50,000 years. And the new discovery out in California that puts us back 130,000 years. There's a lot of history you can dump into a 50,000 year time bracket, and even more than you can dump into a 130,000 library. What happened during that time?
Well, yeah, to your point, when every time we have those new discoveries, right? Every so often we'll get a new discovery, and it always pushes back the timeline on when civilization began. Based on your research and what you've published in books, how old do you think the human race really is?
You know what? I can't even answer that question right now, except to say a lot older than we think. And I'm not even talking thousands of years. I'm talking about the possibilities of millions of years, and possibly even more than that. The Earth has been around for, 5.5 billion years?
Right.
And there is good evidence that a lot earlier than we expected, there could have easily arisen civilizations that were very advanced. As a matter of fact, we look at some things in the past, tragedies in the past where the Earth had to go through a tremendous upheaval of the weather, or it went through a great extinction event. And there's even some evidence beginning to surface that the possibility has to at least be looked at, that some of those extinction events came because a civilization found themselves in the same way we are today, and they did to the Earth the very same thing we did. It's just absolutely amazing to me, the possibilities that are there. And if we don't open our minds to them, as many archaeologists say, you know, if you don't expect to find it, you won't. You'll only find something by opening your mind and looking for it. So in answer to your question, I'd say a whole lot older than we tend to think.
I agree with you. It's a huge blind spot. Most people have thought that all of human history has led to right now.
Yeah.
That right now we are as good or better than we've ever been. We'll never,
right.
You know, tomorrow will be better than today, but we were never better than we are right now.
Yeah.
And I could never get my brain around that. I was like, why not? Why haven't we just waxed and waned through those millions of years, like you said? And like I said in the open, you know, we're just a Volkswagen. Give me a Volkswagen-sized meteor, well-placed, and we're in the Stone Age again.
Yeah.
And a lot of the kids nowadays, they can't start a fire on their own. You know, they're so reliant on technology. Within 90 days, we're in the Stone Age. Then suddenly, if the grid goes down, what happens? In 1,000 years, everything that we've created today is gone. And I mentioned that to somebody who I had a conversation with him, and he's like, well, where's the evidence of the tools used to build the pyramids? It's like, well, what evidence are you expecting to find? If I put a backhoe at the base of a pyramid 5,000 years ago, 1,000 years later, that backhoe is gone. It's made of metal and plastic, and it is eroded. It's completely gone. What are you expecting to find? You know, you could leave the Eiffel, just walk away from the Eiffel Tower, and it's gone in 1,000 years. There's no evidence of it. But I think it's a huge blind spot that people they don't think that we could have ever been as good as we are now.
Exactly. And I agree with you 100%. And we also have to consider the possibility that when we say high technology, we're assuming generators and electric grids and the kind of power that we're used to.
Right.
what if there were other kinds of power that we had no idea, no understanding? What if there was even, well, let's go right out there. What about psychic powers that we're just beginning to understand today, the power of the human mind to do things? I had a great example of this when I was at the Great Pyramid at Giza. A group of us were being taken in, and you have to go with a certified Egyptian guide. They don't let you go by yourself or anything like that. So we're going back, and he's taking us down underneath the Great Pyramid. We're going down this long tunnel that's going down and down and down and down and getting a little smaller and smaller. And as I looked down, we were walking across a wooden ramp that they had put in there because they didn't want us scuffling around on the ground. So we're walking down this wooden ramp, and along both sides of the wooden ramp, there are these wires. And the purpose of the wires was to power the lights that were going on in front of us as we went down.
Right.
And so I began to just think, how did they work down here with no lights, with no electricity? So I began to look at the walls and the ceiling of the tunnel we were in, and there was no sign of soot. There was no sign of torches or anything like that. So I was right behind the guide, and he was, you know, a typical Egyptian guide. You know, he was giving us the regular run-of-the-mill, state-of-the-art Egyptian understanding.
Right.
And I said, well, how did they work down here without electric lights, with no torches? And he just stood there for a minute, looked at me, literally turned away and mumbled, oh, they must have had some kind of a light source. And walked off. And that was all he would say. They must have had some kind of a light source. Obviously, they had a light source. What was it? Perhaps it wasn't electricity. Perhaps they learned to tap powers that we think right now is just woo-woo, new age, wild out, far out stuff. But maybe it was just a science that we just don't yet understand, or a science rather that we have forgotten. I think it was Arthur C. Clarke who said, any science, if it's advanced enough, is going to look like magic.
Absolutely.
So for us right now, we think of the powers that they must have had at their fingertips, possible mental powers, a psychic toolkit, I like to call it. How did they move these great boulders? We couldn't do it today. How did they do it? These megaton boulders. How did they work underground like that? How did they shape the stones that in Peru and in Central America? How did they do all that? We just plain don't know. And a lot of scientists are saying, "Oh, sure, we know exactly how they did it. They must have done it." But then it just doesn't add up when you actually go there. It doesn't make sense.
Well, you bedazzled the Egyptian tour guide, which is basic logic. I mean, you asked just the most basic question, and it just completely derailed him.
Nothing.
Totally.
Nothing. Yep.
Totally gone. But I'll even do you one better. In my, what I always thought about in terms of the pyramids, you're talking about moving the stones into place.
Yes.
Just the art of creating the platform, the plateau itself. That this football field sized piece of rock, or you know, that they perfectly level, and depending on how old you think the pyramids are, 5,000, 10,000 years later, still perfectly level. The amount of upheaval that the world has gone through, the environmental changes, and it's still, and that thing has not moved. Yeah. That alone, with the amount of weight on top of it, each one of those stones is 3 to 5 tons, something like that.
Oh, some even bigger,
And this plateau itself was an engineering feat that is almost unparalleled.
Yeah.
But you're right. They'll talk about using 20,000 slaves and a ramp. Where's the ramp? I mean, the ramp had to be a mile and a half long to get to.
There are two things about the typical Egyptian thing that I have not yet been able to have anybody answer me. The simple mechanics of that ramp that you were talking about, the ramp would have to actually be more massive than the actual pyramid. And there's no evidence of dismantling ramps and putting them anywhere else or anything like that. Besides that, if it takes how many hundreds of people to pull this stone up this ramp around and around, put it into place, you still have to move those stones so close together that you can't even put a piece of paper between them.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, you can't put enough people to get enough hands on that stone to wiggle it in the last few inches into place. You may be able to drag it up there somehow with 100, 150, 200 people, but there's not room around this stone for 150 to 200 people to stand and jigsaw this block back in. It's just unbelievable to me. And I don't understand. I didn't understand, at least before I began to write Hidden History, I didn't understand how ingrained this idea was and why the people were so, why specialists are so afraid to face some of these things and say just simply, we don't know. Except that to do that, we would have to say that perhaps we are not the epic of civilization that you were talking about. Maybe we're not at the apex. Maybe other people were there before us.
But what's wrong with that? I mean, you talked about the conspiracy of silence earlier. Yeah. What is the motivation to suppress the story? It seems to me like a valid discovery like that would turn the world on its ear would be incredibly valuable, both monetarily and just the reputation of the person who made that discovery. It seems like something that people would be searching for, not suppressing. What is the motivation to suppress it?
You know, I have studied this and looked over it. I've looked at people, for instance, say in another field. Let's look at Hugh Everett. Hugh Everett gave us the multiverse. He was the one that came up with the whole idea of the idea of universes splitting off and forming all these infinite number of bubbles. And perhaps there are many, many universes around. Mm-hmm. When he introduced that idea, which is really fairly common now, he was blackballed from physics. He couldn't get a job in physics. One of the most brilliant physics people who have ever come along, and he couldn't even get a job. He had to wind up working for the government. And it's probably a good idea that he did, because he was also the one that came up with the whole idea of mutual assured destruction, which may have saved us during the Cuban Missile Crisis during Kennedy's time. But he died thinking he was a total failure. And now his ideas are accepted. But back then, they just wouldn't do it. Warren Moorhead was another one. He was an amateur archaeologist up in New England. And he came up with the idea that the red paint people, some of the earliest people in New England who moved in to Maine and the Maritimes right after the glacier melted, he came up with the idea that they were a well-traveled people. They had boats. They had trade routes that went from Nova Scotia and farther north all the way down to New York. He came up with the idea they were an advanced people, and he could not get a place at a table at the symposium to put out his evidence. They just wouldn't accept it. He died thinking he was a failure, and now his ideas are accepted by many archaeologists. I just don't understand what this knee-jerk reaction is until I began to do something that I think was kind of interesting. And I have no scientific basis for this. This is only my own opinion.
Okay.
But in my main field, I was a Protestant minister for 40 years before I retired. And in my religion, which was Christianity, you have all of these people who form denominations who are always fighting with each other. We're right, you're wrong, that kind of thing. And these people who will go to the death defending their own particular belief. And I came up with the idea that the same thing was going on in science, that scientists too form denominations. It's us against them. And if they come up with any of these crazy ideas, well, we just don't have anything to do with them. I hate to say it, I made this mistake myself. When I was writing Lost Civilizations, a Denisovan bone had just been unearthed for the first time. And all it was a little finger bone in a Denisova cave in Siberia. And from this finger bone, they had extracted this kind of evidence about the size of the person and this and that and everything else, and how they must have been here at the same time Neanderthal came up. And I hate myself, because in Lost Civilizations, I was a little bit sarcastic, and I wrote, and they've got this whole thing just on the basis of one little finger bone. Well, a couple of years later, I had to eat my words, because they found other bones, they found other evidence, they found other DNA, and they were exactly right. And here I was poo-pooing this whole idea of getting a whole new species from one little finger bone, and yet they did. So I had to, you know, eat my own words and say, wait a minute, why was I defending the idea so much that this couldn't have been? It's a terrible knee-jerk reaction, but we Americans we modern people have a hard time admitting we're wrong and we don't know as much as we think we do.
Well, I do think it is a need for prestige. I think you're right. Some of these people, they think very highly of themselves. And if somebody else has puts forth some philosophy or some theory that's different than theirs, I think you're right on there. And just in terms of the pyramids, I think the Egyptians just kind of inherited those things. I don't know that I think the pyramids and the Sphinx were already there. And so at that point, it's a point of national pride. They say, well, we built these, and they concoct a story as to how and why. And but there really is no other real evidence that it was there. I mean, I'm sure you, Robert Schock had taken a look at the base of the Sphinx and saw some water erosion there. And the last time that would have happened was 12,000 years ago, right?
12,000 years ago. I was there myself and I saw it's obvious erosion. The Sphinx must have been there the last time there was heavy rains. And the last time there were heavy rains in that part of Egypt was 10 to 12,000 years ago. And the pyramids themselves, sure, they have probably been rebuilt.
Mm-hmm.
And we find the graffiti written by the crews inside and everything else. But we just, the Egyptologists want to just assume that these were the people who built the pyramid. And they have no idea of thinking these may have been the people who renovated the pyramid. I did a lot of woodwork and construction. And I've done a lot of working on homes, old homes, and refurbishing old homes and things. And I took one room apart, took down the sheetrock, and I had found that the original person who had built had put up a newspaper article and dated with his time. And I would really get a kick out of that. So I left it there. And next to it, I put a newspaper from my own age, from my own time, and put that right next to it. So now we have two newspaper articles, one from the 1800s, one from the 1900s. And who is to say if they just found the 1900 when they say, oh, this house was built in 1990? No, it wasn't. It was built 100 years before that. I was just the renovator. I wasn't the builder. And I think we have the same thing going on in the pyramids. I think they are much older, especially the base upon which they sit. I think there has been a complex of Giza for, as you say, 10 to 12,000 years. I think you're absolutely right.
Do you think that the hieroglyphs, we're talking about the hieroglyphs, do you think that those were created by the more recent Egyptians, or were those remnants of that previous civilization?
Boy, that's a hard thing to know.
And I only ask that because they show a lot of things that are open for a lot of interpretation, right? If anybody who watches Ancient Aliens, things like that, you'll see what could be interpreted as a space. You know, it's either a halo around his head, or it's a space helmet. It's either they're holding something that looks like a light bulb. They're holding something that looks like, you know, electricity. So are we to believe that that was the Egyptians 3,500 years ago, or was that the civilization prior?
Well, I don't know, but in any kind of a situation like that, I always want to be open to look for the earliest dates. I really do. I think that Graham Hancock has done a terrific job of telling us about some of these things. And I have come to my own personal conclusion after writing Lost Civilizations and Hidden History. I am 98% convinced that much of our civilization was not invented by us. It was inherited. It was given to us. Last September, I was scheduled to lead a tour with a sponsorship of Ancient Origins magazine to Turkey. And we were going to be visiting Göbekli Tepe, and we were going to look at Derinkuyu and Çatalhöyük and a lot of those old places, because that's where that was really the cradle of our particular civilization. Well, as it turns out, we couldn't go last September because of the whole pandemic thing. And so we've rescheduled it for next September.
Mm-hmm.
But I really want to go there because I'm just 100% convinced, in my own mind at least, that our civilization was what we inherited from another civilization, a previous civilization, which was advanced, which was, probably didn't have the same kind of technology we do, but they had a technology. And it was probably destroyed in a great cataclysm that brought us into the Younger Dryas Ice Age and to the conclusion of the Younger Dryas Ice Age. And it was probably of such cataclysmic proportions that many of the myths that we have today, many of the stories we have today, for instance, the flood stories and all those, probably go back to those days. And I'm in when you talk about Egypt, I'm especially interested in Egypt because when I was there, I just kind of tried to steep myself in what the Egyptians call the Zeptepi, the first time. And the legends and the stories that come down from there, even in some of their written histories, talk about a people coming from the sea. And they were a very advanced people. As a matter of fact, later mythologies turned them into gods. And so when you're talking about this kind of the hieroglyphics and everything else, I think we have to be open to the fact that they may have inherited that rather than invented it. And they may have, our civilization may have been jump-started by a civilization that came before us.
Well, and talking about coming from the sea, you know, there are structures, I believe it's in Asia somewhere. I'm not sure if it's in China or Japan, but there are, quote unquote, those pyramids there that they, depending on who you talk to, some people say, well, it's naturally occurring, but come on. I mean, they were right angles, but the fact is they've been submerged in 100 feet of water. And the last time that would have happened is 15, 20,000 years ago, something like that.
Sure.
So again,
sure.
But you always, anytime, if you just go right off the shore, pretty much in any country in the world, you find remnants of something else. You know, whether it's the Bimini Road, you know, down in the Americas here, or we're talking that pyramid in I can't remember if it's Japan. I think it might be Japan. Anytime you go too far offshore, you'll find something.
Oh yeah. So and even onshore, I mean, Gunang Penang is great, you know, raising all kinds of red flags right now. And you're right, off the coast of India, in the harbor off the coast of Alexandria. Of Cairo, rather, as you look at all of these things, obviously there were great civilizations that existed before the Mediterranean Sea was a sea, you know, when it was just a little lake and grasslands. And they're all over the place. We just have to spend the time to do it. And it's so difficult to get traditional archaeologists, traditionalists in anything to really get up and move and try some of these things. Here at the Topper site, for instance, where I live in South Carolina, Al Goodyear, who was the archaeologist there who was leading it up, he was a Clovis first man all the time. And when he got down to the Clovis level, he wanted to stop digging. But he was amazed at some of these other places around up in Pennsylvania and in Oklahoma and down in Texas and, of course, down in Central America. And he began to say, well, I wonder if there is anything down. And he said it was really difficult. He had to gather together his students and say, listen, I want to dig deeper, but if we find something, we may be ruining your careers here. And he told me this himself. And so it was with a great act of courage that he dug deeper. And certainly, after a while, he began to find human artifacts that were way deeper and way older in time. So it takes effort. It takes real work, that's for sure.
I also, you being a man of from ministry as well, you see a lot of stories from the Bible or from different spiritual texts where we talk about people coming down from the clouds, which could be interpreted in a lot of different ways, either as a space traveler or somebody just has air flight. They're finding little model planes that are aerodynamically, they're viable. You could actually fly this. They actually built one, I think, and it does fly. So you're seeing evidence that someone knew how to do these things. Someone knew how to fly. I do think, unfortunately, though, just with the amount of, because again, I think right now, as the more advanced you get and the better you get with the materials that you have, and you start making things that are ultimately smaller and lighter and quote unquote more powerful, but they're also more destructible, if that's the word I want. You know, if I throw my iPhone in the grass, in a couple hundred years, it's gone, completely gone.
Oh, yeah.
It's been biodegraded.
Yeah.
So you won't see evidence of it. But if I shape a stone into a certain design, So that's why they're saying, oh, well, all we can find is the stone hammer. Well, yeah, that stone hammer came 10,000 years after my iPhone.
Yeah, that's right.
After we've reset. So my question is, and I may be going off the rails a little bit here, but I think you're kind of the guy to talk to about it. We've also heard some things on the moon and mm-hmm. some parts about the moon regarding, and also Mars, regarding structures on the moon, pyramids on the moon, on Mars, seeing bases on the moon, seeing a man, what appears to be intelligently made things. Mm-hmm. Could that also not be, and again, I'm just going flight of fancy here, could that also not be those same technologically advanced humanoid race, whatever that may be, beforehand? If we learn how to do it now, what's to say we haven't learned how to do it before? And things would be much better preserved on the moon than they would be here with the erosion and the environment and earthquakes and lava flows and everything else that is there to destroy it. Have you uncovered anything like that through your research?
Well, you know, I think it's fascinating when we talk about life in outer space. It could, I think, I happen to be one of those people who believes that the universe is full of intelligent life.
Yeah, I would agree.
So the big question is, well, where are they? Well, maybe they're so intelligent that they're here, but we don't know it. But an interesting idea would be that as soon as we were able from take the time when the Wright brothers made their first flight until we flew, until we made our first space flights, or Sputnik when the Russians did it back in the 50s or whatever. And you take that time, which is not a lot of time, but as soon as we were able to build a probe that would leave Earth and travel out, Voyager. Carl Sagan, of course, was the one who came up with the idea of the golden record and recording all the Earth sounds and everything else, and the pictures of a human being saying hello and all this kind of thing.
Right.
As soon as we could get out of our Earth orbit, the first thing we wanted to do was send something out there to communicate, here we are, just in case.
Right.
Now, first of all, you have to say, if other civilizations came to that point millions of years before we did, why didn't they do the same thing? Or is it also possible that perhaps life was seeded in our part of the universe from earlier civilizations that were right here on Earth and were able to leave, and now they're coming back, so to speak? Look at the Nazca lines in Peru. The only way you can make sense of those, is from the air. And when you start talking about those planes, those model planes in Egypt and everything else, you can see them right in the Cairo Museum. It's just positively amazing to me that it's just screaming. People say, where's the evidence? I'm saying, well, listen, open your eyes. It's there if you'll look at it.
What will it take to change that public perception? If you say that out loud right now, people look at you funny. They look at you from on the side of their face, and they kind of whisper about you. You're a crazy person. If you just even pose the idea that humans could not have built humans at the time that when they say that they built them have built the pyramids. What will it take? What will we have to discover? What do we have to unearth or dig that will change that narrative and flip it around?
You know, I'm not convinced that we're going to be able to find anything that will flip it around. But the one thing that I am sure will change is if we actually establish contact with another species from off this planet.
Okay.
That would change things overnight. Until then, we've developed some pretty solid evidence, I think. And people just will not accept it because it just seems so foreign. We are creatures who tend to look at our own experience and judge everything on our own experience. And our individual experience is so limited that we can't possibly understand. Think about it this way. If our species arose, well, even 200,000 years ago, and right now it's a whole lot closer to saying 300,000 years ago when Homo sapiens came along. If our species developed then, according to the textbooks, only began 10,000 years ago in Sumeria and in Anatolia and in Egypt, then that means that 95 and maybe even 98% of our time has been spent previous to what we now call civilization. That's a long, long time. 290,000 years what did we do in that time? I can't believe we just, wandered around making stone tools and didn't do anything else. That's in that much time, considering how much time, how fast we've grown in this
right.
short time. I just can't believe that we can discount that whole 98% of our species. And that only takes us back 300,000 years. Well, now we're talking about a planet that's 5.5 billion years old. That's a long, long time.
Well, we're the same people, technically. We're the same people. And so to say that we had this much technological growth in 500 years, 600 years,
yeah.
and then again, was stagnant for 200,000 years before that and did absolutely nothing for 200,000 years before that.
Yeah.
That right there stretches the imagination. Because I'm old enough to remember a day when we didn't have cell phones and things were tied to the wall and you didn't have cable television and you didn't have computers or internet.
And you had to get up. You had to get up from your chair to turn off the TV to change the volume.
And that's all 20 to 30 years. You know, my kids are 20 and 18. They've never lived in a world without the internet. They've never lived in a world without cell phones. So to them, I am Stone Age man, because I remember these times when you had to actually wait for your turn on the phone.
Yeah.
So it's just a hubris thing to me that
I think you're right.
We got 500 years where we went from what were we doing? The 1500s. We were barely sailing across, the 1600s. We're barely making it across the Atlantic Ocean from to the New World.
Yeah.
And now, we have, planes taking us everywhere we want to go. We can travel anytime we want by any means we want to get there. But we never did that before. It's just so silly to me. Do you think that you had mentioned some of these earlier texts, the Odyssey, the Iliad, the Bible. Mm-hmm. Do you think that they are more, based on what you've researched, are they more based in fact than we've previously thought?
Yeah. This time of year, for instance, I always get a kick out of it. In Christianity, in Christian circles, it's very common to say that all this talk about other dimensions and parallel dimensions and other universes and dimension and entities that travel back and forth between dimensions and all this kind of thing. It's very common to say, oh, that's all just, crazy. It's not
right
there. And yet at this time of year, at Christmas time, congregations gather together and they sing, "Hark the herald angels sing," or "Angels we have seen on high." What are they singing about? They're singing about entities which stepped out of another dimension, which Christians call heaven, into this dimension to deliver a message. Now, that to me sounds like a perfectly good example of the fact that, other dimensions exist. And yes, entities do go back and forth. Enoch in the Old Testament, the famous story about how Enoch never died. He was just taken, beamed up, so to speak. Why would people write something like that if there wasn't a basis of a nugget of truth behind it? And there's all kinds of stories about Ezekiel, for instance, seeing what looks, if you read the first chapter of Ezekiel, you're going to swear you're reading about somebody who is having a conversation or a meeting with ancient aliens, because he even describes the spaceship and what it looked like and the wheels and how it made this great roar and everything else. Hindu philosophy is full of this too. In the Bhagavad Gita and the Upanishads, we find about the descriptions that sound just like describing an aerial battle today between two planes, or a nuclear explosion, perhaps even in India, in the Mahabharata, and on and on. I think these ancient texts are talking about something that happened, something that was real. And then over the years, our religions have bounded them around with customs and with rules and regulations and made them into these static things that they are today, which I think are totally different than what the founders saw.
Well, you spent 40 years in the ministry. How has your work over the past 10 years, 15 years, how has it affected your faith? Has it affected your faith?
Well, surprisingly, first of all, since I came out here to the woods, I came out here to go on retreat. I wanted to get in touch with God.
Yeah.
I wanted a personal experience. And my prayer was answered, but God did not appear in let's say, the traditional Christian way, a way that was much closer to paganism. To be honest, I haven't been in a church for 10 years now, and I'm still Reverend Willis. I mean, I'm still, you know, licensed to go and do all that. But I'm much more comfortable now down in our medicine wheel and that kind of thing. So when you say, in one sense, how's it affected my faith? The superficial answer is that, it's affected it a lot, and that I'm not what I would call a practicing Christian anymore. Except that on a deeper level, I still call myself a Christian, because within Christianity, and although I do not believe that Christianity is the only spiritual practice that's, right, that's of use, but in my own practice, within the metaphors of Christianity, I have found a deeper faith than ever. So in one sense, on the outside, my faith looks like it has been totally destroyed. On the other sense, I'm probably a more devout, deeper Christian now than I was before. So when people say, if I start studying this stuff, is it going to destroy my faith? I say, no, I don't think so. Not at all. You just got to be open to reading it and understanding it in new ways. Jesus called it pouring new wine into old wineskins. You can't do it. If you're going to have new wine, you got to pour them into new wineskins. And our religious forms right now are pretty old, brittle wineskins. And I don't think they can handle this new wine of quantum physics, and this new wine of the spirit, and this new wine of intuition and those kinds of things. But we'll get through it.
Well, you know, I found it amazing. I also listened to Graham Hancock speak, and he was talking about the meteor strike that happened during the Ice Age in North, yes, America, up near the, yes, Montana, yep, Colorado, Idaho, somewhere in that area.
Right across the whole northern state, yeah.
And how that created a flash flood right around the same time frame that they were talking about in the Bible with the Great Flood. And so you also can say, okay, well, you can research these things, and maybe it even reinforces something that you've read in the Bible or different, what, you know, what holy text you may be reviewing. It actually reinforces that, and it shows you that this is not just the whimsy of some person who was writing it at the time, that this was either some oral tradition or some type of passed down truth, something that really happened. Maybe it wasn't as widespread, maybe it wasn't the whole world, but quite honestly, if I'm in Colorado and this enormous flood comes, that is my whole world. Yeah, so suddenly, my, exactly, as far as I can see, is underwater. That is, yeah, that is a worldwide flood. So you know, it's all about perspective, right? So you might have written and said that this was a worldwide flood, and it would be for your world.
Well, you know, it's funny. I just had a go around with my editor. On April 1st, my newest book called Censoring God is coming out. It's the book about it's a book about the fact that a committee put together the Bible, and it studies the stuff that they didn't find worthy. It's the stuff that they threw out. It, in effect, goes back a couple of thousand years and peeks into the wastebasket of the committee meetings after they threw out these different books of the Bible. So I was talking about this flood tradition and how it was so popular in Samaria and in the Near East. And I mentioned the fact that civilizations all around the world have flood legends. And so I couldn't just say that and leave it. I had to prove it. So I spent about 6 pages going through flood legends all around the world, from India and Canada and Japan, yeah, and Mexico and all around the place. And my editor wrote me an email. He says, do you really need to talk about other traditions, floods, legends for 6 pages? And I said, yeah, because we've got to convince people that they're real. They're out there. And so we left it in. I'm glad we did, because that's a universal story.
And it seems so amazing. If you just read it on its face, it would seem almost unbelievable. But then when you get scientific evidence that at this time, during that same general time frame, give or take a thousand years, during that same time frame, we see evidence that something occurred that would correlate with what we've been told. So that doesn't undermine what's written in the Bible, that only supports it. So, you know, you see things like that with our continued research and the continued digging, as you say, suddenly you start to support the things that you've seen in the past, and it might actually help your religion. That's why I was wondering, things that you've discovered and found, did it help or hurt your faith, being a man of faith? So you say that also that civilizations have kind of an amnesia about the past, and which ultimately, in a lot of ways, leads maybe to them repeating it and also going extinct themselves. Do you think that we are currently on that road? Are we getting close to lost civilization status?
Yeah, I think we're at a crossroads right now. I really do. We're at the fork in the road for our civilization. We can go the way of what I like to call spiritual growth. And that doesn't involve just religion. I don't use the word spiritual to mean religion, but I'm thinking in terms of even understanding deeper understandings of quantum physics and the nature of life and what is. We can go that way. We can listen to the old myths, listen to the old stories, learn from the ancients. Or we can use this technology that we've invented that, quite frankly, I don't think we are mature enough. We are moral enough. I don't think we're ethical enough to really use it. Just because we can do something doesn't mean we need to do it. And I think in our generation, we have to make that decision. I hope that we haven't already made the decision and it's already too late. But there's already evidence out there that we may have gone past the tipping point. For instance, when it comes to global or environmental change, we may have been past the tipping point when it comes to nuclear exchange, because we're getting some really crazy people out there in the world who now for the first time have access to nuclear weapons. We're getting there when it comes to this pandemic whole idea. There's a lot of things that can happen to us and happen quickly. And because there have been so many civilizations in the past, I see no reason to think that ours necessarily has to continue into the future. We could become a lost civilization ourselves. Some days I'm encouraged, some days I'm panicked.
But somebody would, logic would dictate that somebody would survive, right? We're not talking necessarily about extinction of the human race. We're talking about extinction of the civilization as it is currently constructed.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know, again, let's say that wave comes across global warming, using that as an example. Say that wave does come across and wipes out, you know, the eastern half of the United States, whatever, knocks down the grid. You know, a lot of people die. Some will survive. Where do they go? They migrate different places. They come out of the woods into some prehistoric village in Peru, and they are gods. You know, they're tall, blonde, white people. They look different than us. They have a lighter in their hand, which is a technology that they've never seen before. And we're being worshipped, and they're building statues to us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, surprisingly enough, if the grid were to be destroyed, and if our infrastructure were to be destroyed, it would be the civilized people who would notice it. There are bush people right now in the Amazon and in the Kalahari. They wouldn't even know about it.
BAU.
They would go on. They would continue. And all it would take would be, like you say, somebody showing up with a lighter in their hand or some kind of technology like that, and a whole new civilization, a whole new mythology would be born.
Right.
Who knows where it would go? But those would be the people who would survive.
And then we get to restart, and maybe this time we actually take Tesla's advice versus crushing him. I mean, that's the other thing to me is you could drop two people into a quote unquote civilization 100 times. Civilization will mature and evolve 100 different ways. To your earlier point, when you're talking about, it doesn't mean necessarily that the technology they had then was similar to what we have now. Could be completely different. They made different decisions. They found different technologies. You know, they went with the way of Tesla, who had found some energy through the earth and was harnessing that. Maybe they went that way. So that to me is incredibly exciting, honestly.
Yeah,
to think
me
you
too.
Could do that 1,000 times and it comes out 1,000 different ways.
Yeah.
We are right here. We're right at the end. I really thank you so much, Jim, for joining me tonight. I know you just talked about another book that you were working on. Is there anything else that you'd like to take a moment to plug while we're still here?
Well, people can keep up with what I'm doing and even get in contact with me. I love to be in contact with people. If they go to my website, www.jimwillis.net, and it has a contact page, and I'd love to hear from you. I also have a YouTube page. If you just put down Jim Willis, and we're putting up new videos. We just put up two new videos in the last couple of weeks, one about dowsing and one about the birthplace of early religions. That's all on the YouTube page or the Facebook page. However, yeah, I'd just love to be in contact with people, and that'll tell you what's. It'll also announce the when the new book is released, Censoring God, too.
Censoring God. And once again, the books we were kind of talking about tonight were Lost Civilizations, The Secret Histories and Suppressed Technologies of the Ancients, and Hidden History, Ancient Aliens, and the Suppressed Origins of Civilization. And if you're watching the YouTube or the Rumble account right now, I have the pictures of the covers of the books on the page there so you can see what they look like as well. But once again, you can find jimwillis.net and also on amazon.com if you're interested in buying those books as well from Amazon. You can certainly do that. Thanks again, Jim. I appreciate it. I'd love to talk to you again. Like I said, this is it's a topic that we could talk about for hours and hours and hours. And
thank you, Pete. Anytime.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you again. Thank you.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye. Yeah, Jim Willis. We're talking the dawn of civilization, hidden history, hidden civilizations. Do we think that we've basically just kind of recycled and restarted civilization multiple times? I know a lot of times we always go to the ancient aliens route, and I didn't go there because, man, I don't necessarily know that it has to be ancient aliens. Maybe the primary source, the initial source, was potentially not of this world. I don't know. All I ever wanted to say, and the point that I'm trying to make, and I like talking to people who are going in that same direction, is that we've just been here before. We have a waxing and waning cycle of civilization. The Earth is constant. I mean, the Earth has been around for billions and billions of years. The Earth will be around long after you and I are gone. We are not going to destroy the Earth. When we're talking about global warming and climate change, things like that, it will hurt us. It won't hurt necessarily the Earth. The Earth will correct, and it will come back differently. There was a time already in the Earth's past where the makeup of the atmosphere was significantly different than it is now. It might be that way again in the future. I know right now we're talking about CO2. CO2 also acts as an incredible greening influence on the planet. Plants love it. So we've also seen a greening of the planet as CO2 has gone up as well. You don't want to get the CO2 down too low. You don't want to go CO2 negative and suddenly reduce that CO2 level below, I think it's 180 parts per million. If you get down there, plants start dying. So there is a balance we have to meet there. But I'm a big believer in we've been here before. We've been different, but we've been here. We had similar technology, greater technology, better technology. Maybe we aren't at that tipping point just yet. As he said, maybe it takes 200 years. 200 more years from now is when it occurs. Who knows? But I do think probably something like that will happen. We'll run out the string on our current civilization. There will be people who survive. Those people will go in to some jungle, remote jungle location. They'll be found by the natives there who right now just live in BAU, man. They're going out and they're hunting in the jungle. They're fishing. They're living their lives. They don't even know we exist in some cases. We find them. We walk out. We're gods. We teach them something. Civilization starts again. What will they find of us in 1,000 years? Probably nothing. We build everything with metal and plastic and biodegradable things. So what's going to be left of us? I saw a show. It was on, I believe it was History Channel, maybe 10 years ago, talking about what happens when humans are gone. And it starts from day one and then goes to, I don't know, 5,000 years later. Depressing as hell. It was depressing for me because I hate the idea of not being here. I enjoy life. I enjoy living. I enjoy everything life has to give. But it was interesting to hear, okay, this is what changes day one. This is what happens when we're just gone. We're not, you know, we're not dead laying their bodies. We're just gone. And then it just kind of talks about how structures degrade, bridges collapse, buildings eventually are reclaimed by nature. Nature just retakes it all, and eventually it degrades itself and it's gone. You no longer see it. So the only thing we would find, or only thing we would see after 1,000 years, 2,000 years right now, is, you know, the pyramids have been pretty damn solid. They might still be there. But Mount Rushmore would potentially still be there 2,000 years from now. And the people who are left, what do they make of it? They won't find the drills that we used to create it. They won't find any of the tools that we used, because we don't use stone tools. Those tools are gone. What would they think of us? Well, they would think that that was probably an ancient alien, and these are the ancient alien gods that they should all be bowing down and praying to. I don't know. It's an interesting thought. Once again, Jim Willis, Lost Civilizations and Hidden History are the books. He's written several books on that. I did want to find out also from him what his feelings were on religion? Did kind of learning some of the past history and digging into how civilizations rise and fall and where it agreed or where maybe where it didn't agree with what current religious practices are, would it affect his faith at all? Would it strengthen it? Would it weaken it? So I wanted to ask that question of him. What are your thoughts about that? These topics are always really interesting to me. I love doing the what if. It just bakes my noodle. I like thinking about things. So, which seems odd, right? Oh, I like thinking about things. But what are your thoughts? You can contact us through our Gmail account. It's provemewrongcast@gmail.com. We can also contact us on Facebook or Instagram. Prove Me Wrong Podcast is the name of the program. You can find us either one of those two ways. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think. Let us know what your theory is on civilization itself. Where are we going now? How close are we right now to that tipping point? Do we have 500 years? Can we change it now? Is it just a natural cycle of our climate that we get warmer and colder? We are coming out of the mini ice age over the last 200 years. Some climatologists would say that we were in a mini ice age the last 200 years. I don't know. I don't have enough letters before or after my name to be qualified necessarily to speak on that. But be willing to listen to your thoughts. If you are just looking for ways to listen to the podcast, we are on really any kind of podcast platform that you use. We're on Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, Anchor, Podbean, iTunes, any podcast app that you use, you can find the Prove Me Wrong podcast. Like and subscribe to the show, and you'll be notified when a brand new episode is released. We typically release them once a week, so you will be notified when a brand new episode like this is released. You can also watch us on Rumble and YouTube, and this is the Rumble and YouTube screen right here. Like and subscribe to the Prove Me Wrong podcast on Rumble or on YouTube, and again, you'll be notified when a brand new episode is released. Go ahead and press that like button as well. I really appreciate it. Before I go tonight, I do want to talk about our sponsor tonight. Our sponsor tonight is Zendo Zone Citronella Burners from J.T. Eaton, and this is my version of a Zendo Zone right there. They are shaped like Fearless Bug Repellent Tiki Gods. See? So let Surf and Stan, Hawaiian Howie, and Luau Lily bring the islands to your backyard with Zendo Zone Citronella Burners. Zendo Zones uses natural 3% citronella candles and incense cones. Okay, so they're perfect for patios, decks, backyards, campsites, poolside, archaeological digs, and more, anywhere where there's bugs. You can enjoy the outdoors again. They are available on Amazon.com and at select Ace Hardware stores. Go ahead and collect them all today. Once again, for my guest tonight, Jim Willis, my name is Pete Lieb. This is the Prove Me Wrong podcast, and we will talk to you again soon.